This week on Countdown to Infinity, we explore Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. We visit Gold People. We visit a Blue Mary Poppins. And of course, we look at a triangle-faced monkey. This is Countdown to Infinity, and this is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Welcome back to Countdown to Infinity, it's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2!
Oh, we're here again in space and we have a soundtrack!
Guardians of the Galaxy, Empire Strikes Back. What, you've got character separation, father revelation,
right, and an ace pilot. That's Matt Vaughan, aka Matty Stark, aka Matty Know-It-All. Like, he's here, he's with us again, he's joined us on Countdown to Infinity. He wants to get sweaty too quickly. I say, hold it back there, sir. The only reason why this movie was made was to sell some fucking albums, okay?
True.
True fact. No. All jokes aside, this movie is so poignantly perfect in terms of its music choice. And there's a reason for that. The reason is that James Gunn picked the songs before he finalised the script. And that is fucking badass in my book.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I quite like the soundtrack, especially Mr. Blue Sky.
I think it's... I think it's a better soundtrack than Volume 1. Ooh.
Agreed.
But I'm a massive Fleetwood Mac fan, so...
I have issues with that, with the use of that song.
Why? It's used perfectly twice.
I think they undercut the second time by using it the first time. I don't think the first time was too dramatic.
Don't worry, I've got reasons for that, and we'll get onto it. Like,
okay. But the film starts with Kurt Russell de-aged. Like, their de-aging team is phenomenal.
Yeah, but
there.
The de-aged person that they put his face on is Aaron Schwartz. Yeah,
is it really?
Yeah, aka the Mighty Ducks. Like, it's so badass. Like,
that's cool as fuck. Yeah. But he looks like he's just walked off set from The Thing, pretty much, bar the beard.
It's insane.
Do you know what I mean?
The only thing that's different is the smile being wider, and that's because Aaron Schwartz's face is wider than Kurt. This is honest to God the truth, yeah.
Amazing.
Is wider than Kurt Russell. So when they had the dots on his face for the markers and he smiled, it was wider than Kurt Russell's, and they couldn't do anything about it to shrink it.
Brilliant. But, we get the little. He's. Seed planting.
Pretty much this entire movie is quite Geigeristic in its use of biological technology, the symbolism between, like, you know, reproduction and stuff like that. His shit being shaped like a fucking egg, the roots. The scene where we zoom into the roots and it's like, it basically is a metaphor for Kurt Russell diddling
Peter Quill's mom. He's just fucked Meredith Quill, you know what I mean? Like, It's a bit weird, but hey, what can you do? But once we get past the weird little prologue.
But the Brandy song as well works so well.
Yeah, and the car's pretty cool.
And it's really important for later on.
Yeah.
The lyrics and things like that.
But, once we get back into space and then the real action kicks off and then we get the Japanese hentai lover's dream. tentacle monster dripping with goo.
On the last episode, the Doctor Strange Part 2 one, we talked about timeline, and because we're getting towards the end, I think it's important to mention that based on this movie and what we know, this takes place in 2014.
Yeah, it takes place 4 months after the original film.
Yeah, so that means that it's before Ultron and before Civil War. So when you're watching it, just bear that in mind. Like,
I mean, more when we get to Infinity War, bear that in mind, because that means that the guy's been up to in the past many years.
The reason why I think you should bear this in mind is because of the role of Nebula and Gamora.
Yeah, boy.
And because of the use of both of them and what Nebula does at the end of this movie, then...
That would give essentially timeline of Infinity 6+ years.
Which works out quite nicely. Yeah. Particularly if from what Spider-Man Homecoming is saying, is Infinity War basically takes place like after 2020.
Yeah. Or in 2020.
No.
Oh, mind you, because it's Homecoming.
Basically, Civil War takes place in 2020, if we're to believe the timeline presented by Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
Jesus. So that changes everything.
Bloody hell. So confusing. But anyway.
Mr. Blue Sky, ELO, dancing group.
I fucking love this scene so much. It's a great use of background comedy.
And also the parallels between Groot and Peter Quill in the first movie, where he's like kicking the rats and like riding them. And like it just harks back to that. My only issue with this entire movie, and I say my only issue, it really does go quite deep. all over, is I can't help but think of Ice Cube in 22 Jump Street, where he goes, the exact same thing, the exact same thing. We don't change anything, we just do the exact same thing. And
yeah,
that's it.
That is, like,
and that's basically this movie.
It doesn't try and push boundaries. It doesn't try and... The only new territory it explores is P equals Dad. Yeah. Obviously, we'll get into that in a bit. But aside from that, it's pretty much the exact same team dynamic, which is fine. It's fun. It's a good laugh. But it doesn't really push them in a new direction.
And although I fucking love him, and you know from our Guardians 1 episode, Drax was my favourite character.
He annoyed me.
Drax is my least favourite character.
It's the joke a minute thing that pisses me off. But that's, for me, that's the entire film. I think there's too many jokes in it. And that's kind of, you know, I mean, it's a fun film. And I'm not saying that the jokes ruin it, but it just gets a bit boring.
Yeah, you're just waiting. You're never feeling any form. The connection between Mantis and Drax that we get later on, I really like the dynamic of it being like an opposite love story. Like, he finds her repulsive, and that's really nice, yeah?
Yeah.
But he's...
You're gross and I love it.
He doesn't need to throw out a joke because his dryness is his joke.
Yeah, that's why he's funny.
He doesn't... You know, when, in the first movie where he's like, ha, 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 that was great because it was very underused.
Yeah.
In this, he's like, I have sensitive nipples. Like, you know, within the first kind of 5 minutes, I'm like, what? Whoa, what is
this?
Like, where, you know... In four months, he's all of a sudden turned into a complete and utter comic. Like, I don't understand.
Maybe it's, you know, James Gunn's trying to say that he's learnt social skills. I don't know. It's a bit weird.
I don't like it.
But one of my favourite things about the ELO scene, actually, has nothing to do with Guardians of the Galaxy. It's what it inspired many, many people on YouTube to make. And it's different edits of different films with ELO, Mr. Blue Sky over the top. My favourite of which is from Batman v Superman.
Oh my God.
Where they cut Mr. Blue Sky over the Batman fight at the end, where he's in the warehouse. Oh. It's fucking
hilarious. I bet that
hilarious.
Looks amazing, to be fair.
Like, it makes... When he's throwing, like, bloody boxes at people's heads and, like, stabbing people, it's so funny. I don't know what it is about that fucking song, but it makes everything so funny. You could probably put it over a Serbian film and it'd be quite comical. I'm not gonna lie.
No.
That's a push.
There is nothing that's making that finale comical.
I didn't say the finale.
Oh my God. Sorry, I don't know why I went there. So,
but anyway,
after they fight the tentacled creature...
Yeah, hentai lovers wet dream.
Is that from this dimension or another dimension?
Well, it's meant to be interdimensional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it comes through at the top, doesn't it? And it's all like rainbow colours and stuff.
You're saying it comes through a sling ring portal?
No, I wish.
Imagine I would have had a shit, mate.
No, but there is Doctor Strange magic at the end of this film.
Yes, there
however,
is.
We'll get to that later on. What's really funny is that I'm just looking over my notes, and one of my notes is, I really like raccoons. I really like Rocket in this film. He really cracks me
up. Yeah, and actually, him and Drax and me swapped places. The crowning title of this movie is between Rocket Raccoon and Yondu.
Yes,
like, and,
I agree.
And the one thing that I really did like and was I didn't really appreciate this movie like I should have. And I will hold my hands up. I walked out the cinema a little bit disappointed.
Mate, so did I.
And it wasn't until we were doing this and I revisited Guardians Volume 1 that I realised how good this movie is.
Yeah.
Like, because it sets up, it answers so many questions you just don't get from Volume 1. It really does need that first one to prop it up. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, because actually, if we'd have never had Guardians 1 and had this movie in the MCU, we'd have been like, oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah, but I think, you know, a film should stand on its own 2 feet at the same time. I know we say that during a podcast about a cinematic universe. Mm.
Yeah.
But
Guardians 2 can do that. It can stand on its own if you didn't have number one.
Yeah, if you didn't have number one, but we do, and I think that's its problem. It relies too heavily on a similar comedy, a similar-ish storyline.
What I do think we need to address right this second is Groot is dead.
Like, Groot is dead, mother.
Groot is officially dead.
He confirmed it himself.
Seeing on screen is son of Groot, lack of a better term.
Baby Groot.
And we get to the Sovereign's court court area, yeah, I guess, man. We could. And, you know, this is the whole scene where, like, Rocket has stolen Amulak's batteries and he can't fucking wink. And that thing was amazing.
That was so funny. But, right, what I noticed is when Aisha is talking,
yeah,
all of her words mean absolutely fuck all. It's all just exposition.
Hmm.
And it's really, I was watching it like, you're not saying anything. You're saying very long words to make it sound like very, you know, much like a monarch or like a ruler. And I was just like, you're just a dick.
Yeah.
You're just a gold dick.
Do you know what I would have preferred in this movie? Is if she'd have gone through with the raised eyebrow joke of wanting to mate with Peter Quill.
Yeah, that'd
because be imagine, you know that scene from the first movie where the alien wakes up and it's like, oh, sorry, I forgot you were here. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If he'd have done it and then Gamora found out then
walked in,
then I think that gives more weight to this are they aren't they moment between him and Gamora. I didn't like the dynamic of those two in this movie. I
found it really annoying.
There's no need whatsoever, given what happened in the first movie, why Gamora would be this standoffish with Peter Quill.
Well, this is the thing. So I saw an interview with Zoe Saldana and she said that Peter and Gamora will never be a thing, right? And I was like, okay, going into this movie, I am completely fine with that. And then in this, it was just like, oh, I'm in love with you, clearly. And it just bored me. The dance scene annoyed me.
Yeah, that whole... And do you know what? I've read a lot that basically says that from Groot not dancing in front of Drax to that final dance scene between the two of them kind of thing, it is all meant to be one long message. I didn't get it. I didn't feel that message. So therefore, they failed at that. What they didn't fail at...
is Gamora's dip dye. Bruv! Yeah. Hey, she looked sick.
I mean, she is sick. She's one of the best characters in the MCU.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And, you know, the part where in this Rocket can't wink and then they're on their way out and stuff like that, like, that just leads you onto his character. That helps you later on. You know he's an arsehole in a lovable way.
Yeah.
And then that leads you on to the next part where you find out he's stolen the batteries and they're playing, you know, Lakeshore Drive as they're getting chased down by the Sovereign.
Yeah.
That was great. That was amazing. That was
pretty cool. And Drax hanging out the back of the Milano was pretty cool, I thought. Shooting at the one ship left. Also, we need to talk about the arcade game that the Sovereign are playing, essentially.
Yeah. Gallagher.
It's basically Gallagher.
Yeah, how fucking cool
Which
is that?
Which has been referenced before.
In Avengers. Yeah. That man is playing Gallagher.
You didn't think we noticed.
But we did.
And what I love about that scene in Dust as a Heartback is that you see him close down the, the screen.
Yeah,
could have just been him being a dick, but it wasn't. The guy actually was playing Gallagher.
But I just thought it was pretty sweet that there's just this entire like bank of arcade ships. That
deep dive.
One
and
of
I
the,
don't...
One of the, in that scene, one of the Sovereign is the main character from Farscape.
Yes. Yeah. It's her right-hand man, isn't it? That's really funny.
Okay, if we're going to get really deep then, Lakeshore Drive basically is a front for a song about LSD. Let's not fuck about. Yeah. It's called Lakeshore Drive, LSD. Fuck off. Yeah, we're in Kirby world. Yeah, we are bright, we're colourful. And as it's playing, we are a scene away from meeting Mantis. Guess who Mantis was created by, Eamon? Mr. fucking Engelhart, who we discussed last time.
Yeah, boy.
The drug-fueled motherfucker who loved a little bit of LSD. Like, and I, that, it all comes full circle. I love it. She was introduced in Avengers 112 by Engelhart. And I just love that that is playing when we, obviously we see Kurt Russell on top of an egg, which is great.
It's pretty awesome. Although I'm not quite
surfing
sure.
Surfing an egg and waving.
The only thing, you can't see, but Dav and Matt just both really, really enthusiastically waved at me then. It was great. one thing though, he's wearing goggles and I don't know why.
Space, innit?
Yeah, space
but,
dust.
Yeah, but he's a celestial. Like,
space dust.
Cool, but he's a celestial.
Space maybe box. He likes him. Maybe he's actually a steampunk. Maybe he's just been a Camden and it's just gone to the Cyberdog.
Being a Camden.
Maybe amazing. He's just
he's come
just...
from Comic Con.
Yeah, yeah.
Bloody hell.
He went dressed as Ratchet and Clank.
They got little windscreen wipers on the front. For space bugs.
Did you not think that the scene flying through the asteroids, you know, to go back to Matt's point at the beginning of this, the Star
very
Wars
Star
reference,
Wars.
It's very yeah, Millennium man. Falcon.
Yeah, I completely agree. Although I did love the switching between Rocket and Star-Lord,
yeah.
of the pilot in the
you
ship.
See, I fucking didn't. Did this not? Is another part that I thought was pointless.
I thought it was funny.
They're trying to one up each other.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was
but
funny
it
to
was
begin
done.
With.
It was yeah, and that's what it yeah. was funny to begin with. But then what it did is it made the crash on Bearheart completely. It was like, oh, so they had that argument for because it was although they had that tender moment later where they're like, are you just trying to make everyone fucking hate you?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I like that moment, but you could have had that without. I don't believe that either of them would be. Like, what they've been through in Guardians Volume 1, I don't think either of them would be stupid enough to crash their own ship out of arrogance.
No. No,
they've all come together. Yeah. They've all fucking held hands to control an Infinity
yeah,
Stone. Like,
yeah.
they've been through a lot. Like, I get that there would be, like, this friction. And that the whole point of this movie is, who is your family?
Yeah.
Who really is your family?
Is it the person?
Yeah. yeah is it the ones you choose or the ones that you're given? And that's what this whole movie is about. And it executes that very well.
Yeah.
But, you know, put it this way. Me and my brother, we fight a lot, yeah? We get at each other. We scrat each other, that sort of thing. But we wouldn't fight to the point in a car where we crashed the fucking car.
No, because that's just
stupid. And that's what this movie did.
But as Peter Quill says, you were cybernetically engineered to be a douchebag.
Yeah, I mean, that's brutal. What is
brutal
really cool
fuck,
is they do land on a planet
Bearheart.
That, yeah,
yeah man.
Which
yeah,
it
yeah.
is straight out of Planet Hulk.
You fucking know me.
You
fucking
mate,
know. It's not the first time they reference other things, though. There's a reference to Annihilation later on,
I
actually,
know.
Funnily enough.
But I really, really loved that because I knew we were getting, like, and do you know what's really weird? There are lots of Easter eggs in here I don't think we've quite got yet. You know, the references to the Grandmaster, the references to Bearheart. Like, I can't help but think that we were a lot closer to Sakaar in this movie than we actually were given credit for.
Well, I mean, we do see some of the Cronin during the 700 jump scene later on in the film.
And that's what
fighting.
I mean. Do you think that there was a massive talk between Gunn and Waititi before
hands
this?
Down. It wouldn't surprise me if before Infinity War there were talks of crossing over Thor.
Yeah.
With the Guardians or having the Guardians in the cameo.
It all just
feels
too perfect. And I can't imagine that Taika Waititi is the sort of guy that would be like, right, I'm going to heavily mine from this other creative's world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
there
would have had to have been a conversation there.
There would have been some sort of like symbiosis with that, I think.
Okay, so moving forward, we meet Ego, the living planet.
Yeah, man.
I honestly thought in, you know, and speaking of Thor and how it connects, like, we first saw Ego in Thor. It was issue 132, the original Thor series, 1960s. Give it to me.
Trippy as fuck.
But that's what's beautiful about this. Like, Kurt Russell looks like, the older Kurt Russell looks like Ego, the living planet. And he was a planet with a fucking face on it. Yeah. And
everybody was wondering if it was going to be.
But they did it. They did it later on.
They did it later on, but everybody, you know, was like, is he going to be just a talking planet?
But I love the way they connect the worlds of Celestials and then this. And because he never was a Celestial in the comics.
No,
he was
just a big planet.
Yeah, just a big fucking planet. But that's what I really liked about this movie. It was seamless in terms of explaining what he was, how he came to be, how he would have met Peter Quill's mother. Do you know what? In these movies, a lot of these movies, you're like, for example, that little kid in Iron Man 3 being Peter Parker, yeah? It pisses me off. It pisses me off no end, yeah? It's pointless, yeah? Why do we need that? It doesn't bring anything to Homecoming.
Yeah.
In fact, it just fucks my timeline even fucking more. I hate it, yeah? It's bullshit. This felt realistic. This felt like, wait a second, that would explain why Peter Quill is essentially really, like, in tune, stupidly lucky.
Yeah.
You know, he's in favour with serendipity. The entire way through these movies.
He's got the light.
Yeah. And he doesn't know why. And that gives him the charm. You know, like the Han Solo charm.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. And it makes sense to me because when you meet Kurt Russell and he is uber charming, right from the
off. Oh, yeah.
You see, wait a second. They are very alike, even if they're just like parent, son. But then when you learn about like the powers, all of a sudden, oh yeah, that's why he could hold the Infinity Stone. That, you know. Yeah. But I really like that, and that I thought that was really good. And when he takes them to the planet, one little fact here, which is amazing, is when they land and you see the landscape of Ego's world, it's actually the most amount of polygons on screen ever rendered in a movie ever.
It's at
1 trillion polygons. That means nothing to me, but I guess it's big.
So this is the visual effects behind the scenes work. Do you know what I mean? But this is when we meet Mantis properly. When we have the nice scenes between Drax and her, and sort of weird anti-relationship develops between the two. And we learn about more about her powers and that she can put Ego to sleep. Now, I've kind of briefly mentioned this before as well. If she can just put people to sleep, then can't she just put Thanos to sleep?
And yes and no, but you have to get
Thanos up. You have to get close enough.
Like, the only reason why she was able to do that to Ego is because he's so vast, it's quite easy to get through his defenses.
Yeah, but
how the fuck does someone like, and I'll throw this out there, when you've got the Black Order?
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it's
how
easy.
How does no, but you could say that about anyone.
Yeah.
Well, how come the Hulk can't fuck up Thanos? Do you know what I mean? How come Ant-Man can't fucking grow in his gullet and kill him? Do you know what I mean? Like, these are all questions that
I think the film will actually answer though.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think there will be a specific reason
as to
why
Mantis's character does not lend herself well to a confrontation.
Oh no, she's very timid.
Yeah,
she doesn't actually have as many powers in the movie as she does in the comics. Project in the comics. She has pyrokinesis. She can. Do
I
a
think
lot
we're
more
probably
than,
gonna see her blossom. I do. I don't think this is the end. Now that she's,
because to be fair, Ego will have probably like suppressed a lot of her potential.
Now that we're out of her just being his fucking servant, I think we'll see the development of her.
Odds on Peter Quill shagging the Mantis.
I don't. Do you know what? I prefer to see him shag Nebula.
Oh God!
Because it'll piss everyone off.
I don't even want to think about that.
Well, Jesus. I think it's only because I have a real thing for
Karen Gillan.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't have a thing for Karen Gillan?
She's absolutely beautiful in Jumanji.
She is absolutely
gorgeous.
But we get to the brothel planet, and in my notes,
robot prostitutes.
In robot prostitutes. In my notes, I've got clearly autocorrect's been dicking me over because I've got Howard the fuck.
Well, technically, he is at a brothel, so who knows?
Yeah, he has been Howard the fucking about.
We get our first look at some of the original Guardians of the Galaxy here.
Now, this is my thing because we get more of that later on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
With Miley Cyrus, which blew my mind. Yeah, I need to see a Guardians movie that is them, though.
I think Guardians 3000, it was in works at some point. I think they're going to try and do that.
It'd be amazing.
But the two we meet initially are Stakar, a.k.a. Starhawk, and fucking Martin X, man.
Mate,
what the fuck? Deep cuts.
This is one of those things that I know we talked about it on numerous shows, where it's one of those moments in this movie where if you know, you fucking know.
Yeah, man.
And when Sly Stallone came on, I was like, fuck off.
I actually really liked him in this film.
He was perfect
so
for that.
Good. And I love that they sort of translated his stereotypical, you know, big long yellow arcing bits of his armor into like a jumpsuit type. Like
very Judge Dredd though.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Very Stallone Judge Dredd.
Very Stallone Judge Dredd, but in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. It was amazing.
I liked his costume.
And I like the way that they describe this, because from the first, and this is what I mean, the Titans, right? See, the thing is about the Ravagers, that they, you're led to think from the first movie that they are just one group, that they, you know, they exist on their own, almost like space pirates, but, you know, they're actually lots of different groups that come together under this one Ravager's banner.
Yeah, and I mean
clans of Ravagers.
Yeah, because as Stakar says, you know, you've lost the business of 99 factions because you served one.
Yeah.
And that's quite a heavy moment, really. Yeah.
But it's where we're seeing
it. It says a lot about the split between him and Yondu.
And I love the fact that it almost sets them up as lovable rogues again. We already loved Yondu, but the fact that we're led to believe that we would love the other Ravagers more. And there's a really nice scene at the beginning of this where you see Yondu with his shirt off, and James Gunn specifically did that to show that Yondu was vulnerable, that he's been hurt and stuff like that. And this whole movie, and we get to a really good part later that, you know, I thought was such a beautiful moment, but this is him also struggling with family, what family means to him, what who is Yondu's son? Because that's what this movie is about. It's about a father finding a son, and it's not the father and son that you're presented with.
Right. I think if you're part of Yondu's crew, he sort of has a little bit of a fatherly aspect to everybody. Because I very much felt the same with Kraglin.
Yeah.
Sean Gunn, the director's brother, funnily enough.
Who is an incredible actor.
I thought he was, like, fantastic.
The minute at the end, you know, where he shouts, really hit me, man. Yeah. Like, emotionally hit me. Like, and this movie, and that's why I struggle with it so much. Because although the comedy takes me out so much, and there are plot holes that take me out,
but there are emotional beats that really work.
There's gravity to this movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is gravity to this movie. Like, but we won't get onto that yet. But
anyway, there's a bit that I actually find quite... it's heavy, but not very forceful, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's when originally Mantis and Drax are sort of like, you know, chatting, and she's like, oh, can I pet your puppy? And she, you know, pets Rocket.
I love that part.
And he bites her, and then... Ego calls him a triangle-faced monkey.
Oh my god!
And all Rocket, and it's funny. And then all Rocket does is just he just like touches his snout, and he just looks really sad.
Yeah, it's so.
And I was like, it's a really simple moment, but it's like, oh,
it's so heavy.
Like, fuck, dude.
Followed by a scene which is completely weird, but I loved it. The Zordu Hasselfrau and his magic boat.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Which
it's
basically
like yellow
was,
submarine but in space.
No, but I loved it. The Zordu Hasselfrau and his magic boat is essentially Gamora fucking up David Hasselhoff and his magic car.
Yeah.
Like, that's what is so brilliant about this scene is that the Chinese whispers element of, you know, that Peter Quill has been talking about Knight Rider. And Gamora is just like, oh yeah, Zordu Hasselfrau and his magic boat. No, it was a car!
For fuck's sake.
I just love it so much.
Yeah.
Okay, and I don't know how true this is, and I really want it to be true, but originally, you know where... this line was put in later, because when Kurt Russell appears to him as a different figure from his past year, apparently that was going to be David Bowie.
Oh shit!
And it was gonna be, and there were gonna be Bowie songs in this movie, and it was gonna tie in, and essentially he was gonna present himself as Bowie, and then when Bowie unfortunately passed away, it was changed to another huge '80s star, was David Hasselhoff. But that's what they wanted to do because if you think about
loved that.
It would have been an amazing moment, and it would have tied so much into the music lore of this movie,
especially because Bowie's on the soundtrack for the first film.
Can you imagine throwing out some Starman in this and then Bowie shows himself? But it would have been poignant, but
Bowie.
That never happened. So
Bowie. Oh, I'm sad. Anyway, so we get to them repairing the ship, and
they're
about
Rocket
to
repair the ship. Yeah.
And this is when we first used the chain. Now, the first time that I saw it in the cinema, I was like, okay, fine, this is a great song.
Well, the chain's used on Bearheart, isn't it? When they're about
this
to
is what
go.
I mean. This is what I mean. It's used then, and then they leave, and that's fine.
Okay. And, say your piece, and then I'll say my piece.
Personally, I thought that song wasn't used in the right place.
Okay.
At this point. I feel that using it twice undercuts how fucking awesome that song is.
Okay.
So when it's used later on, it's like, oh, it's that song from earlier. Not like, fuck, this moment's amazing. This song is amazing. I don't know.
This is where I completely disagree with you. The Chain is a song about family being strained to the point of breaking apart, but being able to save it back before you do that.
No,
so the first time we get that, we're getting it with Peter Quill and his estranged new family being torn apart and really wanting to do it. The second time we're getting it is with Kurt Russell and realizing the follies of actually having him as a father.
Yeah.
It's used in two poignant moments where Peter Quill is drawn to different sides of a coin, and that's why it's used, that's why it's the only movie, the only song to be used twice in either of these movies, is because lyrically throughout this, there's a thing which I think is amazing in this, and I'm going to pronounce the word for it wrong because I had to look this up, right? But in this movie, every song you hear is played from something. It's not like a soundtrack. It's played, all the songs are played from something. And the reason why this is, it's called
diegetic.
Diegetic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the reason why this is because James Gunn wants to show you what these characters are listening to, because that then leads you into more about their character. Now, we've all been in a moment where we've listened to a song on repeat because that is reflecting how we're feeling, yeah? And there is no way that Peter Quill, being as into this music as he is, would not use music in the same way that any of us three would. As any of you listening, he would. He would use music to pinpoint, when I'm feeling down, I've got certain songs to listen to. When I'm feeling like I want to get pumped up, I've got certain songs I want to listen to. And I feel that this, more than ever, was almost Peter Quill pressing repeat on the play button. And I thought I was emotionally taken aback by the choice of that. I thought it was incredible. And that's why I would disagree with you in terms of, I don't think it was a scoring choice. I actually think it was a personal characterization moment. Yeah. The songs in this are a character in themselves. They're their own character, and you have to look at them. If Mantis walked in that room at that one time and then walked in again, like you've got to look at it like that. You can't look at it like, oh, that song was used twice. You've got to look at them like their own individual characters each moment.
Fucking hell, I only wanted to say it because I didn't like it. Sorry for having an opinion, Dav.
Your opinion is wrong.
You're wrong.
But then we get to a moment which threw every fucker. We all knew it was coming, but it throws us all, yeah? And that's where we find out, we've got that whole hall scene where he finds out why he went to Earth and he planted the seeds and he wants to spread his life.
Fucked everybody.
And I really like the point where he says, I was a brain floating and then I learned how to control matter. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
But then we find out that fucking Kurt Russell put the tumor.
See, this is
in
another,
Meredith Quill's head. Because he didn't want to be drawn back.
This is another point in the MCU where somebody murders a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and it's heartbreaking. It's different to like in Civil War when Bucky full on fucking murdered Howard and Maria Stark. But this is more emotional, and I think that's what makes it almost worse, because it's not like, you know, she was shot or she was, you know, strangled to death. She had a slow, fucking awful death.
He is,
but
celestial.
It's also relatable.
He's a celestial. He could have been killed. Like he could have just been like, you're gone.
Yeah.
Done. You're done. You're over. And then he doesn't have to come back again. Mm-hmm. But I really did not. Like, that was...
It was a cruel...
A very cruel
fucking game. Awful, isn't it?
And the thing that I... Do you know what's even crueler when you go back and think about it, though? He timed the kidnapping. He knows what's going on all around the universe.
He clearly
universe,
knew when she was going to die.
He knows the second she was dying... And manipulated it so that Peter was kidnapped seconds after seeing his mom pass away.
That's fucked up, man.
That is unbelievably deep. And when you look at that, that's what makes the relationship between Nebula and Gamora so fucking shit in this movie. Like, they've been through what can only be described as some of the most horrific interactions with any character ever. And that's where we're getting our first real glimpse of the horror of Thanos, yeah? Every time I lost, he replaced a piece of me. Like, that is epic, and it's lost because it's lost in this weird, what the fuck were you thinking cat fight that just happens to end in the bone room.
And the
worst part about it was when Gamora fucking takes the gun off the Milano. And I'm like, that's fucking shithouse. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
It really pissed me off. And it really pissed me off so much because I was so emotionally invested in what was going on with Peter Quill and Ego that
adding another conflict in felt too much.
Yeah, and I was like, their conflict is so easy to portray. It's actually sisterly hatred, and it gets exacerbated because Thanos is evil. Like, and that's what I don't understand. When you can bring a new character in and you can have him have such an emotional moment with an old character, and you can't explore the relationship between two pre-existing characters that we already know the backstory of, that's bad storytelling. It's really bad storytelling.
Do you say this is a screenwriter?
Yeah. I do.
What sort of scripts have you written down?
I've written Justice League Dark, which got shelved. I wrote Flashpoint, which got shelved. I wrote Nightwing, which got shelved.
It's really bad. I want all those movies, and they're just
but
never
on the flip
happen.
Side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here on Planet Ego?
Yeah.
We have Rocket and
yes,
Nebula.
We do.
And lovely Mr. Taserface.
Taserface! But what we also get is Yondu's classic fucking fin, man.
Yeah.
Holy
it's
shit.
Amazing. That was such a good.
Do you know the story behind this? Well, they didn't put it in the first one. Was no. apparently because it was going to be too big and too cumbersome for him to walk through doorways
fantastic.
And stuff like this, but bullshit.
Do you know what else I really love? The explanation of, oh, that was the prototype.
Yeah.
It was so good. Yeah. And the other thing I really like about this scene as well
I
is...
I just like that it's like a fucking mohawk, man.
I really love it. I love the fact that Groot basically... Groot basically slags off the fin before we even see the fin.
Yeah!
Where he's just like, what? Yeah. You? That's why you don't like hats? Because you think it makes people's heads look a weird shape? Like, he's literally slagging off Yondu to his face.
Yeah, it's fucking great. But we also... Can we just point out, we've missed a really, really fucking important part that blew my fucking mind. We have to talk about Stan Lee at this point.
Yeah, amazing.
Oh,
it's
my
huge.
God.
It's, because so, it confirmed what all of us had thought.
Yes. Yeah. So during the 700 jumps, where we see, you know, all their faces go...
Which again, I'm sorry, that was... I really hated it.
I hated it.
I hated it. It was so... It was so Acme. It was. Yeah. I love the Easter eggs in it, absolutely. But it was so Acme. It was so like Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
I was just
Looney
waiting
Tunes.
For someone to go la, with their jaw. It was
Looney Tunes
so,
is the right.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, it was. It was so corny.
But through one jump, we see a moon of some kind, and Stan Lee is sat in a spacesuit. Talking to fucking watchers, man. We're talking like 10 feet tall, huge blue cloaks, massive fucking heads.
People's twice the size of a man with the proportions of a baby.
So what Eamon, what does that mean?
Does it mean?
Tell me.
Does it mean, Dav?
That if you look at the credits.
Does it mean, Dav, that we were right all those episodes ago about our theory that Stan Lee is Uatu?
I mean, we can't really take credit for that considering that we didn't watch these in time. We all thought he was a watcher.
Yeah.
But... you know, we had seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 when we started it. So, but yeah, it does. And I really like that because it, there's two repercussions for this. Number one, it sums up everything we thought, that is cameos within the MCU are all connected. And I really like that.
Two,
yeah.
It just makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And three, it means that technically everything that has been Marvel beforehand, including the X-Men movies, including Deadpool, including... Yeah. Everything is fucking canon.
Just multiverse. Yeah.
Multiverses are canon. Yeah. And that means that the X-Men universe runs parallel.
Fuck.
Which means...
Well, it's going to get killed off soon.
No. Because I think, because they're not going to put Deadpool under Disney, there is no way that...
Do you know what? I actually think they will. I think
they're going to keep Fox as a brand, like
exactly.
Touchstone. And I think they're going to let the X-Men universe play out for quite a while because they're doing good things, yeah? Play out. And then they're going to bring Fantastic Four over to the MCU.
I'm just confused at what you mean by good things, because X-Men Apocalypse was not a good thing.
Well, don't even get me started. I rang Matt directly after watching that movie, and I wasn't exactly
pleasant. It's basically Ivan Ooze from fucking Power Rangers, man.
No, I'm not even going that. What I hate is there's a fucking giant beam in the sky.
Once again, looking at you, Suicide Squad.
Beam in the fucking sky. When are we going to stop beaming into fucking skies?
Fantastic Four.
So essentially, in the credits, Stan Lee is credited as Watcher informant. So it's not known whether he's an actual Watcher yet or an informant they use, but I would guess for him to be...
He's a fucking Watcher.
He's got to be, really, I guess. He's
if
just
you're
an
listening,
informant.
He's a fucking Watcher.
I reckon it's Uatu in training.
It's fucking Uatu. It's
but then
Stan
obviously
Lee,
him being credited as that does
don't
tie together all of his...
Don't listen to Matt. Uatu is Stan Lee. Are you getting ASMR over Uatu? Can you hear my voice talking to you about Stan Lee?
But let's get to the fucking fight. Come on.
Before we get to the fight, it's an infinity moment that we need to discuss. We are here to talk, do the countdown to infinity, and we've got to discuss it, yeah? Mm-hmm. Eternity.
Yes,
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah,
and eternity in Peter Quill's eyes, and he says, I can see it, and he talks about you can see eternity.
Right,
yeah?
Now, this may just sound like a, you know, infinite universe that he can see, mm-hmm. or just the expansion, its full potential. However, eternity is a fucking character. Holy
eternity,
shit.
Eternity is a form. Eternity, okay, let me just get a little bit sweaty right now, yeah?
You get sweaty, son.
Eternity is... the universe is everything, is the ultimate God. He controls and oversees and watches and does everything. He, she, we don't know, yeah?
Them.
them, Z. The thing is about Eternity is he's always pictured, they're always pictured as a black infinite space with stars in it. Yeah. So it looks like a folding in time. That's what we see in Peter Quill's eyes. The importance of this is that if Eternity exists, it opens up the original Infinity Gauntlet comic, in which that Thanos realized when he learned of Eternity that he, even with the Infinity Gauntlet, he was not the most powerful being in the world, mm-hmm. in the universe, in the galaxy, in the cosmos. And so use the Infinity Gauntlet to make himself Eternity. He took Eternity's place. So then he controlled and ruled infinite time. That's when Nebula was able to gain control of the Infinity Gauntlet and rain furious wrath down on Thanos. This is an important moment because I really hope this isn't one of those things where they're just like, hey guys, look, Eternity. I really want it to play into Infinity War.
I hope
I want to get that cosmic.
Even if it's just a brief mention.
Do you think that the usual, and it's a question to both of you, that the usual MCU movie watcher, rather than a comic book watcher, mm-hmm. someone who's just been invested from maybe Captain America or Iron Man or something like that, are they going to get the concept of Eternity?
I think it depends on how well it's explained. Because I think, you know, comic books allow for a certain level of understanding. Like, if you say, that's a cosmic being that can do X, Y, Z and is important because, you know, you can fucking
create
universes.
Well, yeah, with comic books, you can give as much backstory as you want and people will read it. With a movie, you only have a limited amount of time and attention span.
And if we're doing it Infinity War, that means that by the end, by the end of Infinity War, we've got to explain what... we already have introduced Celestials, but we've had them in two very different forms. We've had Nowhere, which is ahead. Go.
There's also the vision of the other Celestial in Galaxy 1.
Yeah, okay, true, very true, very true.
True.
No, fair enough. So we've had three very different incarnations of Celestials, right? Mm-hmm. So we could suggest that Eternity is a Celestial, but then you're almost damaging how powerful...
But then, you know, Ego says that he's the last Celestial at one point, so it's like...
I just can't see the see the choice of saying
I think it's
the word Eternity and showing Peter Quill's eyes black with stars in right out of the pages.
Yeah, I think I want to see Eternity. I don't think we're going to see Eternity. I think we may get explained as that's Thanos' reason.
But do you
I think it's there for a reason.
The only reason why I would lean towards it is it's the ending of Infinity Gauntlet arc. How it ends. That's how we finish. And therefore, I honestly can't believe that if you're building up to Infinity War, you could possibly have Eternity mentioned and not... It's the same. It's what I was saying to you about Nebula. Like, if they have Nebula so heavily involved in this universe and Nebula does not grab that that gauntlet... What the fuck? I'm going to feel cheated. Yeah, and I can't believe that I'm saying that. We're weeks away from Infinity War and I will feel fucking cheated.
But let's get to the fight scene.
Go for it.
So we have, you know, this huge sprawling fight that's across Ego, essentially, and then it all comes into the center of him. And it gets back to that
shitty Avengers moment.
Wait, have you forgotten about the dart moment and the escape from...
Oh, fuck, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's fucking cool as shit.
Yeah.
What, where he uses the...
Yeah.
Yeah, Yondu uses the...
The slow-mo...
Yeah.
New thing. That's fucking amazing. Control of the dart is insane. Fucking amazing.
But I have to be honest, you know, if Yondu would have just fucking ended Tay's face, then the Sovereign would have never found them. I'm just saying, he fucked up there. He may be Mary Poppins, y'all!
Mary Poppins, y'all!
But...
That is a fucking great scene.
That is an
scene.
Amazing scene.
I love the fact that Groot gets his revenge on the one that was like being a massive idiot. Yeah, and just like throws him overboard. Yeah, it's pretty great.
This is a moment which I hated. Not that moment. We've gone to the fight scene and they're all teamed up. We've got this Avengers 360 moment.
Right,
it was amazing.
It's, awesome.
It's so good. And we're getting our cosmic Avengers because that's essentially what the Guardians are.
And then Marvel, again in this film, pull the rug out and make a joke out of it.
Oh, fucks
Mantis,
me. Oh.
Mantis gets hit by flying rubbish. And then fucking Drax says, oh, Mantis, look out.
Yeah.
What the fuck? And then...
Delayed reaction.
Bearing in mind that moment in Avengers where they all back-to-back is one of the greatest moments in cinematic history... And then you could have had it again and everyone would have cum their fucking pants and you decide to make a fucking joke out of it.
Stupid.
It's fucking stupid. You get fucking it's lame. Pac-Man. It's oh wah, mate, wah, wah, oh, wah, wah, don't wah, even wah, get me started wah, 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 on that. Wah, wah, wah. I thought I was watching fucking Pixels. I thought Adam Sandler was gonna fucking jump out and be like, "Where's Peter Dinklage?" Yeah. Like with a mini. Like fuck off. It's shit.
Stupid. And everything, you know, why was it that form? Why? And I get, yeah, he's fucking, you know,
it's
rooted
meant to
in pop
say,
culture.
Yeah,
I get
well,
it. I get it.
Meant,
he's a kid.
He's
I get
meant
it.
To say, oh, I don't really know anything else. My imagination shit. Well, turn yourself into a giant Peter Quill.
Yeah.
Turn
or
yourself,
a gun.
Do you know what would have been really funny and a really lovely moment would have been if he'd have turned himself into a giant rocket. You know, Rocket the Raccoon fighting the Celestial as a giant Rocket the Raccoon because secretly, deep down, he knows that Rocket is the most badass person he fucking knows.
No, do you know what would have been funny if he'd turned into David Hasselhoff?
Yeah, or Knight Rider.
Or Kit. Oh my God, if he turned into Kit, that would have been amazing.
I think that would have made more sense.
That would have made more sense.
I know he says earlier in the movie, I'm going to be like a, 80-foot Pac-Man. But like,
so he's gonna make a statue of Pac-Man. Yeah. But like, I'm gonna make some weird shit, and that was what I did like though.
Yeah,
because you would do. First that. I mean, that, thought. Yeah. It was like, I'm gonna make some weird shit. That's great. But right, this is what did piss me off. Right, just before the Pac-Man moment, and Ego and Quill are on opposite sides of the fucking inner side of the planet, whatever, and they're about to jump off. And when they do jump off, the graphics look so shit.
Mate, the graphics
look
all over.
So bad.
It's just so CGI heavy that there were always going to be moments of this movie that look
bad. Yeah, it just fucked me off.
That was one of those. That I said one earlier, where Gamora's got the fucking gun. It looked comical. Yeah. She didn't look like she was even remotely straining, and I don't care how fucking strong she is. We've never seen that level of strength from her before.
No.
And so to be presented with it like she picks it up like it's nothing, I'm like, you're fucking having a laugh, mate. At least make it look like, at least go back to that Captain America moment where it's like fucking struggling to pull a helicopter. Like, do it.
But, eventually we get the, flowing down Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Well, least we finish this movie.
He may have
high.
Been your father, but he wasn't your daddy.
I loved this moment. It sums up the movie. It's perfect. It's emotionally done. Like, Chris Pratt smashed it. Like, it's amazing.
It's when he realizes that he's
and
being
you know
saved,
what the
self-sacrifice
the last song that Yondu was listening to before he made the decision to go and help Peter Quill was Father and Son. And if you don't fucking well up in that moment, you are heartless. It was. And that, and then you've got that moment, and I literally have goosebumps thinking about it right now. And it's so perfectly shot, and it's like, find a girl, settle down, and it shoots to Gamora. And I was like, oh my God, fuck me, this is getting me in the feels. And then you see that moment we talked about before where he's like, when the fireworks go off.
It's the Ravagers have all come back. They've realised, Yondu is Yondu.
He's back in the clan.
We're not going to leave him.
I thought this was beautiful. I thought it was real gravity and real emotion from a movie that up until this had been quite vacuous. And
it'd been a bit all over the place.
And you get a nice redemption.
Do you know what I mean? One of the heaviest parts of any Marvel movie, because it really is, we're losing a character we love.
Yeah.
When has that happened?
Like a fan favourite character.
Like when has that happened? A fan favourite character being lost, But it's done with such grace that it feels right, but is so devastating. It's incredible, and I hate to sound like I'm like, but it is absolutely stunning. And if even a small part of Infinity War is done with that much tact, we are gonna be in for a roller coaster.
I reckon there'll be tears.
I really want to be.
Am I the only person that really wants like a high death count in this film? I really want Thanos to like full on fucking kill it.
If
it's not over 8 people, I'll be pissed.
I think we're going to have half of the Avengers dead.
If we're following on.
A lot of people are talking about when that click is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because what about, I'm throwing it out there, what about in the first half an hour of this movie?
Oh, fuck, mate.
First half an hour of this movie, Thanos clicks, half of them go, and that's why we have to go back in time. That's why all of this shit kicks off.
But anyway.
Anyway, then we've done that. Then we get to the post-credit scenes.
And there are
Five.
Five. And they're all scenes, man. So important. So run them down and we'll discuss them.
I think the first one is not important.
Really?
Craiglin stabbing Drax by accident? You think that's important?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because it shows that he's now a member of the Guardians.
Well, yeah, but like...
It shows that the legacy is continuing on. However, as well, do you think we're going to get Yondu and Captain Marvel? Fuck yeah, we are.
Yeah, of course.
It'll be so sick.
Even if it's in a small cameo, like...
That'd be so dope.
True that. Yeah. We're getting Ronan back. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm interested to see what Lee Pace does with it in a different setting. So that'll be interesting. But, second one, the most important one. The original fucking Guardians team up.
Yeah,
man.
It's amazing.
What the fuck?
It's really good.
What the fuck?
I lost my mind.
Yeah, mate, same.
And so, again, it's one of those things that if you don't know, then you don't know. It doesn't make any difference. No. All you think is there is going to be another team that's going to be out to try and save the universe. Yeah. That's all you think. You don't realize the importance of it.
So we get Charlie 27. We get Krugar. Get Miley Cyrus's mainframe.
Mate, I loved her as it. I thought that was such a different take on it.
But the bit that got me was Krugar. Fuck, dude, he used Doctor Strange magic to do thumbs up.
It was so sick.
That's amazing.
I loved it. I was like, but it, I can't help but think that when you have a character like that yeah. uses magic, it felt so Guillermo del Toro. It literally felt like I was straight.
The only thing that I would have liked better if the effects for Krugar were practical, and that was somebody, you know, we're talking like Shape of Water level.
Guardians 3000, director by Guillermo del Toro. Fuck off. Can you imagine? Oh, if we get dark alien space, Guardians 3000 with Sly Stallone and Guillermo del Toro. Oh my god, take my money. Have it all.
Take all of the money. But there is another little reference, but it's not a post-credit scene. The Grand Master briefly appears on the side of the credits.
Oh, that's so right, does Peter Quill's grandfather. Peter Quill's grandfather only appears in the post-credits, but he also appears when Kurt Russell and Ego is spreading across Earth. He is driving the pickup truck away from the...
Yeah, he is on. He almost gets engulfed.
You can lose that so quickly, but it's a nice little touch.
Because Grandmaster's meant to be like brother.
It's the brother to the collector.
Yeah. No blue skin though. Anyway.
But this is what I was saying earlier. There must be a bigger plan. There must be stuff in here that we haven't even been led to yet. Because otherwise, there is no reason why he would be in there. No reason. Not.
But the next one is fucking incredible. So we see Aisha sat, by the way, disheveled.
Before you say, I think this is all a massive red herring.
Me too, I do. Yep. And I have something to say about this. I think it's all a massive red herring. Yeah.
Well, if we're talking about Adam fucking Warlock, which we are.
I want it to be there so much, and it gets back to what we were saying earlier. It's like, you don't drop an Infinity War bomb like Adam Warlock if you're not going to use him, and they're not going to use him.
So that's
what fucks me off.
Well, this is the thing. James Gunn has said that he wants to use Adam Warlock in Guardians 3. So there are plans for him.
Mate,
if you're going to use Adam fucking Warlock...
And you're doing Infinity War...
And let's be honest, they're doing him properly.
Yeah.
Like, well, I say...
Cocoon,
properly.
Gold skin, being able to be the most perfect being in the universe.
The only thing they're not doing, well, I don't think they're doing, is, you know, putting an Infinity Stone in.
Yeah, because he's the only
character in Marvel lore that can wield the Infinity Gauntlet without being corrupted.
Exactly.
To drop that on a post-credits, we've got
one stone left, and you're like, fucking Adam Warlock, he fucking had the Soul Stone.
I mean...
The thing that annoys me is I won't be annoyed if he makes an appearance in Infinity War.
But if he's going to be the main antagonist in
Guardians Volume 3...
Could you imagine?
I'm going to be so annoyed. Why even use him?
Could you imagine if between, you know, Thor and the Guardians Queen to Earth, if on the way they meet the Sovereign and Adam fucking Warlock appears? Because they're going to have to travel to Earth. There's going to be a period of time where they are traveling, even if it's, you know,
I just don't think we're at a place yet where even Thor could talk round the Sovereign to go and look, there is something bigger than this right now.
No, neither do I. But
and you if you're going to have Adam Warlock has to go head to head with Thanos.
Yeah.
That needs character development. Like when Nebula takes on the Infinity Gauntlet and becomes corrupt power absolutely, Adam Warlock goes and helps Thanos beat her. so that they can regain the Infinity Gauntlet. And then what he does is Adam Warlock takes it because he's the only one that can control its power without being corrupted because he's the most perfect being in the universe, and he banishes Thanos to a planet where he becomes a fucking farmer. Like, I'm sorry. I'm fucking sorry, yeah, but, yeah, like, yeah. Why aren't we doing this? Yeah. Like, you can't... Oh, it's like if Nebula doesn't pick up that Infinity Gauntlet, I'm fucking causing a riot. If Adam Warlock doesn't fight Thanos and is used in Volume 3, I'm flipping a fucking table. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, fuck off! Yeah.
So, have you guys seen the latest theory on the Soul Stone?
No.
Okay, so...
The Wakandan theory.
Not the Wakandan theory. Okay,
so because that's been out... Well,
there is something going around very recently regarding marketing material for Infinity War, and it kind of makes really
is
good
this,
sense.
Is this the Iron Man thing by any chance?
Yes. Okay, so there is two different instances in poster artwork and also on, I think it's some shot glasses or a set of glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
There is artwork where you've kind of got these crystalline forms in different colours, I guess, representing the Infinity Stones.
And it's different
and
characters.
Inside are visages of characters involved with each Infinity Stone. So like the Tesseract is a blue stone, it's got Captain America in there, you've got Doctor Strange for the Time Stone, etc., etc., etc. Every other one makes sense.
Except Iron Man.
Soul Stone has images of Iron Man and War Machine, which you've got correlations between where they were.
But don't you
and
think
appeared.
That's because the colours match up to.
It's not because
Iron
of that.
Man.
It doesn't.
It does, though.
Because you've got Captain America, Doctor Strange, the Guardians of the Galaxy, you've got
if
Thor
you think
with
in red,
Ether. Everything relates.
If you think in red, you'd put Iron Man on the Ether. Wouldn't
yeah,
you
would. I mean, instead of orange.
Gold.
Red and gold go hand in hand.
Everything matches up to where the stone appeared or is related
to. Well, there is
and
a story
Soul
in the comics.
Soul Stone goes to Iron Man.
Where the stone is inside Tony's brain. And
God, I literally...
Do you know what? You just went deep on Adam Warlock, right?
Mate, we're getting to the end of this episode, and for the first time in a year... I'm a little less excited for Infinity War. Like, for the first time in a year, I'm actually like, oh my God, there is actually a point in which they could really fuck this up for me. And oh my, I don't want to do this show anymore. I've talked myself into thinking that they're going to fuck up this movie I've waited 10 fucking years for.
Following that premise, they're kind of, what people are saying is that it's high. If you follow that premise, then Soul Stone has appeared or is involved with the Iron Man movies iteration. It has appeared or is part of, because everything else matches.
Yeah, but we're getting bleeding edge armor. So if that's Wakandan, then we could actually have both of those theories that the nanotechnology is controlled by the user, which is controlled by the Soul Stone.
Mm-hmm. To be fair,
do you know what I mean? That could tie it all in.
We've had so many things.
But have you seen some of those animatics where Peter Parker's suit is bleeding edge armor as well?
No.
What's going on there?
No, what the fuck? No.
Like, the zoom ins on animatics of basically Spider-Man's costume coming out of his web blasters.
Oh, fuck.
And I don't know if it's in the movie, but it comes out of his web blasters, and that's the Iron Spider suit. And it that changes everything. Because if Spider-Man's Iron Spider suit is actually bleeding edge armor as well, then Jesus Christ, we've got a real battle on our hands.
Fuck, man. Fuck.
But then if you're going into your theory, why the fuck wouldn't Spider-Man also be on that?
Yeah,
true.
On each, you need to look it up and have a look at it. But
I don't want to because spoilers
are
real.
A few people,
and I make too many connections already.
Yeah, same.
Final post-credit scene.
Scenes. So we see teenage Groot in his room,
which
playing,
is great.
Playing arcade games.
Father and son again.
And Peter's like, oh, is this what it's like living with Yondu? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of cute. And then we see Hasselhoff say, "We are Groot" at the end of the credits, which I just thought was a nice little touch. And then finally, we go back to the Watchers.
Yep.
Stanley's like, no, guys, where are you going? I've got so many more tales.
Of course he does. He's going to live forever. It's fucking Stanley. He's going to fucking speak forever. He's going to be in every fucking movie.
Yeah, man. So, anyway, ratings.
I'm going to... This sets up so much. And actually, if everything that I want for Infinity War isn't in Infinity War, it's because of this movie. Because it sets so many things up, which could be throwaway Easter eggs, but actually could ruin me. So as a result, I'm going to give it a 6.5 out of 10.
Whoa, that's not where I thought you were going at all.
6.5 out of 10.
Wow, okay.
Because I actually think, this may be an Easter egg aplenty. I think there's a lot of red herrings in here, and they're using two poignant red herrings to mess with my emotions like that. Yeah. I thought Drax was weak. I thought the relationship between Gamora and Peter Quill was weak. I thought the relationship between Nebula and Gamora was weak. I thought that the CGI was not strong at most points in this movie.
There are parts that don't look
good. I really love Ego the Living Planet. I really love him and Peter Quill. I love the explanation.
Nice.
I love the fact that we can go forward with Star-Lord being part celestial. Mm-hmm. I get that. Love that. But the Easter eggs, I think, are red herrings. And that, you know, that's almost feels like a kick in the dick. Like, it feels, do you know what I mean? You don't mess with people's emotions like that. I'm sorry, James Gunn, you don't. You don't mess with, you don't mess with this army.
Unless there's a larger
plan.
Yeah,
unless you are going to pay off. You don't put Adam Warlock in a
it's
movie.
It's like if they'd have shown Mjolnir in the sand in the desert and then gone, ha ha, jokes!
Yeah, you don't mess with people's emotions like that. It's, or if we'd have got Sam and Cap talking to Bucky and then we never had Civil War. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't have made any sense. Yeah. Like, okay. So I'll hold out, but until that moment, I can't help... We've been told that Warlock, Adam Warlock isn't going to be in Infinity War. So unless it's a giant, ha ha, he really is, ha ha, then cool. But until then, it's a 6.5.
Okay, Matt, rating?
For me, 7.5.
Okay.
I think about 3/4.
Yeah?
3/4 of a 10.
3/4 of 10. You enjoy it a bit more?
Yeah,
than
I enjoyed it a little bit more. Okay. I definitely favoured it over the first.
What?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You are fucking mental. You are not allowed on this show again.
Wow, that surprises me. Because I really didn't like
this said no one
over the original. I loved the original. Wow. 7.75. Damn.
7.75?
That's what you just said. You said 3/4 of a 10.
Yeah,
7.5. Yeah, 7.75. That's 7.75.
I'm tired and not had coffee. Leave me alone.
And it's because I generally tend to be less harsh of a critic than David.
Well, mate, this got a good score to say that it's fucked me over.
I'm going 7. It's nowhere near as good as the first. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, it gets... it's technically 6, but I give it an extra point for Rocket because I love Rocket's whole character arc in this story.
This would have been a cold 5 if it wasn't for the Yondu Peter Quill moment.
Yeah, that's a great moment. I think, you know, some of the character arcs in this are a bit shit.
Yeah.
Like,
the majority of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Even Rocket. Apart from learning that Rocket is, an outcast, which we already fucking knew... Yeah, and he's damaged, and he's more like Yondu than anyone knows. Yeah, apart from that moment, what did we learn about Rocket in this? Fuck all. What did we learn about Drax in this? Nothing. All of a sudden, he doesn't give a fuck anymore that his fucking family's dead. I mean, come on. You don't care about that. Mantis is underused. Like, Gamora is pointless in this movie. Like all in all.
Also, I did notice it really funny. Gamora walks like a dick. It's because of a fucking stupid, like, heel boots thing.
Heeled boots?
Stop.
It doesn't make any sense.
Just let them die.
It's like boob armor.
Yeah,
just boob armor and heeled boots.
Let it die, man.
Like, I noticed this when I rewatch Wonder Woman. She's got heels on her boots. Why?
There's no point.
Also,
heels hurt, man. They fucking hurt.
It's confirmed that Drax is now canon gray. He's not green.
Okay, well, that's...
But why?
Because they said... I think it's mainly because we've got Green Gamora, Green Hulk. We've got, like, there's going to be too much green.
But it doesn't matter.
Fuck's sake. Just like, let him be green, you fucking pussies.
Let him just be the colour he was born, motherfuckers.
Oh, God.
But my point...
That's whitewashing. Greenwashing.
It's greywashing.
Greywashing.
But my point stands that if it wasn't for the really nice moment of learning... about Peter Quill, and also more importantly, the moment a death. We had a real poignant death, which even in a movie full of slapstick jokes felt real.
I'm just waiting for Marvel to resurrect him, not gonna lie.
Well, we're gonna see him in Captain Marvel, so we will see him again.
Yeah.
But, it would have been a 5. I would have scored this a 5.
Damn, son. Two joke a minute for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Felt like The Last Jedi for me.
Let's not even touch that one, because I know Dav has a lot of feelings.
It hurt me.
Anyway... That's been Countdown to Infinity. That has been Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. If you've got any thoughts, tweet us at Hear Us Direct. You could leave us a review on iTunes. That'd be nice.
Do it. We're getting more and more.
Yes. If you want to, you know, call in with your thoughts, you can do so on the Anchor app. You could even email in at writers@heroes.direct. You can tweet me at Eamon Jacobs.
You can tweet me at Swearbox DJ.
You can tweet me at Matty Stark, but I've not tweeted since 2006.
That's been Countdown to Infinity. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.